double intro to Rack Addicts After Hours episode 72. Hooray! In a slightly different car park to normal. Our strange setup, which... Have we attracted attention with this yet, fellas?
As we always refer to the egging, that was that certainly got someone's attention.
Obviously. But yes, in cars, distanced, because it's not quite legal to hug each other yet, we've got Pete, we've got Luke, and it's going to be a great show where there was no news once more. So we just catch up, you know, we have a chat, it's how it was. We're nearly there at the time when we can reintroduce the soothing sounds of the service industry, cans... little tinkly bits of ice in a glass, a gentle sip in the background. The pubs may open their doors soon. Anyway, Luke, how have you been?
Very well.
Ooh, excellent. What have you been up to? Anything fun?
No, it's lockdown.
Everybody's favourite.
But I can talk more about booze if you like.
Yes, we had a little discussion about Sirencraft, a local-ish brewery that we quite like. But where were you going to go in the booze department?
Well, we can bring that up briefly, if you like, just to say that Sirencraft are very nice. They do a nice array of vegan beers as well, which is quite cool.
Excellent.
What's a vegan beer when it's at home?
Well, sometimes there's a fish filtering thing, isn't there, that confuses me?
Yeah, it's the primary method of adding something essential to the brewing process. I should know this, but essentially you can get around that by using something plant-based, which has the same effect. I remember trying a vegan beer in a really dodgy club in London many gigs ago, and it was a tremendous show because it was the Veg Bar in Brixton. That was it. It was just called the Veg Bar, and I think they just moved into the place at the time, or they'd just taken up residence of the basement section at the time, and there was some cabling hanging down from the ceiling, possibly live, we weren't sure.
Safety.
There was no stage. There was no lights. There was one light on the stage, well, near the stage, near the area where the stage would go if there was one. The toilets were, there was no lighting and no plumbing. It was all very much a sort of abyss in a very long, dark room. It was a great show, though. We enjoyed ourselves. This is when we were doing some of our single stuff before the Mixtape 2 came out. Oh, when would that have been? 2016 or 17?
The deep and distant past that none of us can remember anymore.
I know, right? But the last time I had a vegan beer was there, and it was, I have to say, dreadful. It wasn't fizzy. And it wasn't like ale either, so that, I mean, it shouldn't be fizzy.
So it just didn't work on any front.
No. But Siren have, in the years since, really cracked it. So I was going to recommend High Definition, which is 11.6 or something percent. It's ridiculous.
Pokey.
Very tasty. I think it's a double IPA. So very
about right.
Hoppy.
Quite a double. I enjoy, in the winter months, they have a couple of dark beers, Millionaire and Billionaire, which are strong, chocolatey, syrupy, stout things. Those are very tasty.
Like a porter?
Yes, they are flat. So porterish rather than stout, actually.
Oh, is that the difference?
There's probably others. Beer nerds, please don't attack me. We just like drinking it. One thing that's quite disappointing, a lot of the beers I like tend to be IPAs on the tropical end of things, and often they have lactose in them. So my other half, who's getting into her beer, can't have them. It's a bit annoying.
Yeah,
and she's lactose intolerant.
Well, she's vegan, so she made herself that way.
Okay, fair. Not. It's not a biological intolerance.
No,
it's
manufactured by accident, intentionally. I don't know.
It's an intolerance on moral level.
Yeah, exactly, and then physical afterwards.
Fair enough.
But yeah, what's your standard beer selection? Do you go by style and then see what labels look nice? That's my method.
I like Wells as a brewery. Mm-hmm. I like the banana bread beer, the fun stuff they do.
I haven't heard that one.
It used to come in... Actually, it's not Wells anymore. Or is it Wells anymore? Banana bread beer, I think the Wells brewery, because they used to do Bombardier and Sticky Toffee Pudding as well. I think they were acquired by a new brewery. And that brewery might be Wells, but they have changed hands. Anyway, the banana bread beer of yore that you could only get from Morrison's back when wherever I used to live was in that time... The banana bread beer was fantastic back then. It had this really cool, like, gold and orange label. It has changed a bit. It's got a bit more cartoony. And if I have to say, I think the flavors dipped a little bit. But, I mean, so much of that is probably just age and bitterness. But
and not from the age or bitterness of the beer.
No. But I think I would probably say, I'm a bit of a magpie when it comes to booze, especially, like, wine.
Yeah.
It's like, I know, I like stuff from France, I like stuff from Australia, and that one was reduced from £7 to £5, so we're going to have that one.
Delicious. I normally go, in the wine department anyway, I just trust the Kiwis. I think they know what they're doing and just hope for the best. That tends to work for me.
Yeah.
Any whiskies on the horizon, perhaps?
Well, no whiskies, but I was going to talk about another independent bottler.
Ah, yes.
Who I've had great success with. They are called Kill Devil.
Mm.
And they have a beautiful style to their thing there. I encourage you to look this up, especially in listeners that are into like their rum. So this is
I'm doing it now.
Moving away from whiskey, but going into the world of very good rum. Rum's a weird one. It's kind of exploding right now, especially good quality rum, the kind of rum world of single malt, if you will. And one I'd thoroughly recommend is checking out anything from Kill Devil. They tend to take stuff from smaller distilleries, the Diamond Distillery or Guyanese distilleries or Barbadian distilleries. And they'll just take this really good stuff and bottle it in their beautiful packaging. And the most recent one I've acquired from Kill Devil is the new Navy Style rum, which emulates that old British gunpowder proof rum. It's just really tasty.
I think I'm looking at the right one. The packaging is quite classy.
Yeah, it's got like a black embossed Devil logo on the sleeve. And then the inside has this beautiful gold filigree label. It's kind of done like a stamp.
Yeah, I am looking at the right thing. That looks really cool.
Yeah, they're really nice. So anything Kill Devil, I'd recommend. And we cracked open this Navy Style rum recently, and it was just a real taste sensation. Beautiful notes of like caramel and apricot. Again, as we said previously, my palate is not particularly refined, but you can kind of taste some of these fruity flavours that they advertise, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. Comes in at 57%, so it's the whole gunpowder proof thing. The idea is you could mix it with gunpowder and it could still detonate if you took a flame to it. That's that whole old school Navy thing. But yeah, really good stuff, and just a bottler that I would keep an eye on for whenever they do any new releases.
Excellent. Anything in the non-booze related world to update us on in the world of Luke?
Not really. I've been spending a lot of time
means
browsing.
You're having the best time.
Browsing and drinking, yes.
What about you, Pete? What have you been up at a two?
Well, I received the Noodler.
The noodles.
Which arrived, unfortunately, later than I anticipated, but that was down to me not selecting the right mode of dispatch from the supplier. But it has arrived, and I have managed to get involved with it quite heavily, get it in the studio. I've been using it slightly in a different way, possibly, than has been demonstrated. Most of the people putting up videos that I saw prior to me purchasing the unit were just going with the sequences and arpeggiated parts that it has as standard, and you can manipulate those and you can change key and change the various aspects of it. But what I've been doing is using those, but then sequencing synths that are actually sequencing, so double sequencing, which makes for much more of a synergistical experience. So you know you don't know quite what you're going to get, and I've been changing the clocking on the sequencers running on the arpeggiators, let's say, running on the synthesizers, and changing and trying different clock speeds. So depending on what clock speed you get, so if the Noodler is putting out a sequence or an arpeggio at 90 beats per minute, you could either match that on the synthesizer that you're particularly manipulating, so that could be running at 90 beats a minute as well. So your sequence triggers, instead of every note that it sends to the synthesizer, that synthesizer is also playing a sequence. So it's, as I say, it's a double sequence.
Fun overlapping type.
Yeah, you can get it to cascade. So if you then start changing the timing of the sequence or arpeggio that you're running on the synthesizer, then you can get some really interesting sort of results. And it's not always easy to predict how it's going to go. But what I'm looking for, and I've always said this many times, I'm looking for the happy accident.
Yeah, happy accident machine. Well, for our listeners or our audience who might not be able to Google while they're listening, what is a Conductive Labs NDLR? Noodler, yeah. That's the chap.
Well, basically, it's a four-channel sequencer. The first channel is described as a pad, so it's just doing chords.
Mm-hmm.
The next channel is a drone, so it's just mostly used for, I would imagine, subs. And then you've got two what they call describe as motif channels.
Uh-huh.
So each of those is sending out a arpeggiated motif, which you can go and program. And then all of those four channels are moving in key together. So as you change the key or change other aspects, they all track together. So there's continuity in that respect. But you can change quite a few aspects, especially if the motifs, which are channel 3 and 4, I want to say. And you can do sort of length of note, the order of note. So the usual sort of stuff where you could get sequences that's up, down, up and down, random, etc.
It's not your typical programming your own stuff. It's more of a hardware collaborator.
Yeah, you're not so much programming it, you're guiding it.
Aha. Suggesting. Giving it ideas and see what it replies.
Yes. But as I say, this kind of synergistical approach where I'm sequencing sequences is proving to be, or certainly my first session, it was very interesting, and luckily I had press record, so I have captured it, and there is some gold in there. Not so lucky subsequently. It's, you know how you kind of get something, it's very interesting initially, and then as you sort of mess around with it, it goes off track, and then you have to then start reading the manual and learn how to get it back to the state that it was. And I'm just about to take to the manual. So I'd like to attack pieces of, or certainly new pieces of hardware, without reading the manual initially to see how intuitive they are.
Definitely. That's actually a quick update on the Zoya. I got into the manual and instantly got bored. So, yeah, that's how that went for me.
I'm just in the point where I'm going to have to actually open the manual and have a look. The manual's not that extensive anyway, so it looks like it's only a few pages. Well,
hopefully you survive better than I did.
I kind of think I've gone through... I mean, it's not an overcomplicated thing. It is a rather small screen, and I have noted that there's a lot of areas which are... you just get a menu that just says... still under construction.
Oh, right.
So hopefully developers are still working on it, and there'll be some joyous firmware updates that will provide lots more interesting stuff. It does say your patience will be rewarded or something like that as well as saying
no pressure
under construction.
For them.
Yeah, so I don't know quite where they are, and I haven't really gone onto the site and checked that the firmware level of the box I've got is up to the latest firmware level, and I haven't subscribed to any mailing list, which is mostly prudent to understand when new releases come out. And hopefully it's not one of these things that's going to die on the vine and it'll never go any further than
hopefully indeed.
But I think I'll get something out of it, and as I said last week, my initial aim would be to do these very long form sort of evolving ambient sequences.
Well, the modcaf wants it.
Yeah, so that's the first port of call, and then I'm going to investigate some more of these sort of sequence upon sequence and see how we get on. I've only really been running it with the Prophet 6 and the Novation Summit.
I was going to ask what your food pairing was for your noodles.
I'm going to look at trying it with a few other bits and pieces. Yeah. I had thought about firing it into the wave state, and exclusively the wave state, because that's got four parts.
I'll be sequencing one hell of a sequencer.
Yeah, again, more sequencing on top of sequencing, but as the wave state has just the four parts, I could funnel all the four parts coming from the noodler into the one synth. See how that works out. Other than that, I have put in the order for the Polybrute.
Archuria goodness. Any dates?
I have no idea. I will check the system when I go into work next and see if there's a ETA or anything that indicates when I might see it. I'm not, you know, it will arrive. You know, these days I'm quite a patient fellow. So yeah. I have been watching or recapping on the many videos on YouTube that demonstrate the Polybrute, just to reinforce that I've made the right decision.
Of course. I was going to ask, I think you mentioned before that you might be running out of space a tad.
Yes.
If this one doesn't fit in the studio, do you know what's getting the boot?
I think it's more likely to... I know what... there are a couple of synths which are going anyway because they're surplus to requirement, and that is the Novation Peak, which I only got to fill the gap until the Summit arrived, because the Summit was something like a 6-7 month wait. And I'm going to get rid of my Roland MC-909.
Gotcha.
Which I don't really use, and to be quite frank, it sounds very, very dated.
Farewell.
Yes.
909.
Other than that, I've been perusing Swan Flight Case.
Of course.
My favourite purveyors of flight cases, and I've been considering getting a flight case for the Summit.
Nice.
They had a rather good offer a few months ago, which was buy two and get one free. So I could have cased three of my synths, and I should have grabbed that offer while it was available. I was too consumed with other things and didn't take the opportunity to avail myself of that particular offer. Now I'm regretting it somewhat, but I'm looking possibly just to get maybe the Summit cased up, and then that can be parked. I'm very reluctant to take something out of the studio and just sort sort of leave it somewhere in
yeah.
another room. You know, I can see it getting knocked. I have got a couple of things cased up and they've been parked. I mean, the space is rather difficult, and there is the intention to move the studio into another room, which is three times the size. And that should be enough.
I think you should.
I know, but it's just one of these ridiculous amounts of chores that I've and I haven't taken the opportunity to use the lockdown to progress any further.
Yes, indeed. Well, hopefully we'll have a serious studio tour coming at some point when you've moved, because I think you'll have a good space in there. Well, that could be the future site of maybe a cheeky little podcast corner in there.
Well, that is also the intention, that I would have an area set aside for in-person podcasting, which I hope we will be able to do within the month.
Yes, indeed. Watch this space. We will let you know as we change.
Well, in fact, technically format. We can, because I believe six people can meet together inside.
Oh, inside.
From Monday.
Excellent. We're nearly there. Yes. Nearly back to the original format. We're so close.
Yes, but we can certainly get back into the pub.
Yes, assuming you can actually get a booking, that's the tricky part.
Well, I'm going to phone up and see what the lay of the land, because I did book previously when there was a little window opened up. I think it was, when was it, September last year, when we got back to, I wouldn't say normality, but we did get into the pub, didn't we, on a couple of occasions.
Yes.
But I did phone and book, and then when we presented ourselves, they denied all knowledge of the booking, which was a bit awkward.
I have a bit of news. Self-plugging news. Our esteemed listener, David, actually knew about this before me. I've been rattling on occasionally about, ooh, my EP might be out at some point. It was actually out ages ago, but I didn't notice. David did. But yes, Galactic Bathtub by Robert Rhodes is out now on your favourite streaming services. I would love to know what you think.
How come you weren't of the knowledge that it was out?
I'd kind of forgotten about it. I got really busy. I did all the CD Baby stuff and just kind of left it, and they were nagging me to get sort of PRS sorted for Royalty Collection. I just sort of forgot. Just busy with work and things. I just happened to look.
You're just that cool. Just dropped an EP, didn't even think about it.
Well, it's because I made the EP ages ago and it was on a tape. But yes, that's out. That's exciting. That's the only bit of news from my corner of the world, although my maple bonsai is looking very nice at the moment. It's getting lots of sun. Lovely red leaves.
What colour is it at the moment?
It's the perfect red. We can see in front of us a little bit, there's that lovely deep red on a tree near us, but it's that quite bright red.
I know the one.
Yes.
I know the one.
It's so satisfying. I do have a couple of nuggets that are vaguely news-flavoured. Let me go for the first one, which is very much less news-flavoured. Most of us listening, I hope, know Junkie XL, famous soundtrack composer for cinema and video games. Has a great YouTube channel as well, going over synthesizery stuff, production techniques, writing techniques. He had a video that I scrolled past, which is called Care to Join Me? With a question mark. And it turns out he's a giant coffee nerd as well. So he's going through his sort of espresso routine. He's got quite a few very nice grinders. I don't know why in his kitchen.
So you can get coffee gas.
Of course you can. That's definitely a thing. One of the smart scales that lots of YouTube baristas use is called the Akaya Luna or the Akaya Pearl. We're talking 100, 200 pounds for a scale.
Oof.
And let's be honest, all they do is weigh things and have a timer on them. And I think they're water resistant and rechargeable as well, but that doesn't warrant the price. They have all these Bluetooth features, app connected. Who wants to deal with connecting an app to their scales?
What does the app do?
I don't know. I think they can kind of track your brew so you can see the kind of weight you're pouring in, so you can see how fast you're pouring when you're doing a pour-over coffee.
Okay.
That's it. You can sort of save recipes on the app. It's generally kind of pointless. And sorry, I'm getting a little bit distracted by the cat walking along the fence in front of
him.
The car. I do like me a cat, and he's having a bit of a scritchy scratch. Anyway, coffee, Junkie XL. It was a good video, and he seemed to make a very nice coffee. And he made a little latte art as well, and he said, yes, it's kind of, it didn't work. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Very enjoyable to see that there's some cross-pollination of hobbies, industries, and people that we enjoy watching. The other nugget that I had, assuming I can find it again, of course entirely unrelated, this is a very small, unfinished synth release. There's a little company that does DIY stuff called tube ohm. Ohm as in Ohm's law. Tube as in tube. They have DIY 8-voice polysynth in the works called Genie, and it actually sounds pretty cool. It's based on a Teensy 4.1, so Arduino-ish, programmable, open source doodad. It looks a little module thing. It's got a nice little OLED screen on there, and it sounds pretty cool. I'm still waiting on the pricing, but I've been itching to DIY something again. And there's a few SMD bits, but because it's all Teensy based, it's mostly a through-hole kit and a perfect, what's the word I'm looking for? Canvas, yes, for making a little acrylic enclosure or something for it. There's a little video on their website. So Genie, J-E-A-N-N-I-E. I'm getting stared at by this cat. It's really creepy. He's judging, well, it's a cat. Of course, he's judging us for podcasting, looking like absolute weirdos. But yes, a new 8-voice thing. I did mention Plinky, which is a slightly strange touch plate controlled digital polysynth on Thonk. I didn't have the cash mondo to hand when there were units available, but I'm still kind of I'm tempted to grab one. That's all I could find for news. Did you find anything, Pete?
Well, not news, but I just wanted to say I've had maybe possibly a bit of an epiphany.
Ooh.
Possibly. Well, you know how sort of sniffy I've been about the Moog One.
Yes.
It's a lot of money, and you could get four really decent synths for the same price and so forth. But I have realised what it can do.
Have you been converted?
Well, it's
did
still,
it show you it, the good book of Moog?
It's still eye-wateringly expensive, obviously, and I don't particularly have a hankering to get one. But I have to say, I set up a demonstration for a customer last week. And what we did was actually connect it to some really fine near-field monitors rather than...
What did you plug it into?
I think it was the Genulec, the 8341.
Oh, is that the point source?
Yes.
Proper good stuff.
Normally we just issue a set of headphones and say, there you go, mate, get on with it.
Pretty much, yeah.
But in this case, we got him all set up with the monitors, and some of the sounds that were coming out were truly gorgeous.
Yeah,
I mean, I really kind of get it, and that was just from one of the synth layers. That wasn't with all three voices.
Oh, yeah, just
that
one.
Was just one, but it was just the way it was routing, and that was just a preset, and it was just the harmonics and just everything about it. It was just lush. I can certainly see where the money's gone.
Totally. A good thought. One thing, actually, I suppose a lot of us synth nerds, like me, of course, are not able players, which is a shame because we know some very able players. They could get so much more out of a synthesizer and really show us that they are dynamic instruments. That's something I think I always forget is that whenever I'm playing a synthesizer, it's full whack all the time, pretty much. When you get these really nice, sort of semi-piano-y or keys-based sounds that can be really emotional and dynamic, it's something you don't often hear. So a good set of monitors would probably let you into that sound.
Very fast attack, very fast release type of sounds, very short sounds.
Well, definitely that plucky bit, so fast, quite a quick decay.
Yep.
And then a longer release, or of course sustain pedal. Some of those that can be a little bit Rhodesy or a little bit whirly.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Stuff.
There's definitely a good one on the one which I thought I knew the name for, and then realised I totally didn't. So there was an awkward silence. But yeah, that's interesting because we've been not impressed since it came out, really.
Well, I think the main thing was the eye-watering cost of the thing and having to lift it. Although one of our colleagues lifted it on his own, because I said, it's going to need two of us. And he said, no, don't worry about it. He just grabbed the thing and went with it. And I said, rather you than me.
It's because it's so deep as well. It's just an awkward thing to pick up.
Yeah, I'd rather not attempt to...
Risk $8,000.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
More money spent on the back.
Yes. So, I just carried the stand when we moved it.
That sounds like a good division of labour there.
I mean, I haven't suddenly thought I need to add one to my collection.
I'd be worried if you did.
It's so expensive that it's beyond consideration.
Yeah, and you'd want the 16 voice, but that's
of course, that's the
the horrible end of the deal.
You know, they're never going to go down in price, even second
hand. Yeah, that's true.
Sold a few, but I mean...
More than I thought.
I think it's mostly going to end up being quite a classic.
Mm.
Yeah, if someone was prepared to give me one, or... I've won one in a raffle or something like that. That'd be fine. But I'm not gonna purchase one.
There we go. Luke, are you prepared to navigate us somewhere? Are you prepared to take us on a journey into Luke's Spacey Bit?
Well, that was buttery smooth. I enjoyed that.
Ooh. Well, what have we got?
Well, we've got a brief update on some of the things we talked about last time, featuring a lesser spotted correction, because I misspoke or misrepresented the truth in some small way. I have now forgotten how I've done that, so I'll refer to my notes as I go through.
Well, we know it wasn't a malicious attempt to mislead us.
No,
in our pursuit of knowledge.
Just a misfire, as it were. But, well, let's get into it, shall we? So, you may, if you've not been living under a rock, actually, if you've been living under a rock, you're probably in the best place. But if you've not been living under a rock, the Long March 5B rocket that was in the news so frequently has crashed back down to Earth on the 8th of May. It landed in the Indian Ocean, ending days of speculation about where it would land and if it would do so safely or cause any harm to property or people or animal. In any case, it probably actually has caused some harm to marine life. I'm trying to talk about that as far as rocket launches go. But yeah, so the trajectory of the orbit was about 41.5 degree inclination from a zero orbit. So it was passing over places like New York State, Madrid, Beijing, Chile, and Wellington. Speculation was obviously rife that it was going to possibly land somewhere inhabited. But I do remember saying at the time that the ESA had published a statement saying it was very unlikely to hit anywhere, and of course it hasn't, and it didn't come to pass. It landed deep in the Indian Ocean.
Quickly, I saw this headline. I thought, okay, yeah, rockets kind of fall back to Earth, that's a thing. But then I kept seeing it, but surely it's how long can it take to fall back to Earth? Why did it take so long?
Because this was in orbit.
Was it supposed to fall out of orbit? Was that intentional?
Yes, but this is where the matter has generated some heat and some debate about sustainable and, I guess, ethical rocketry. First of all, we have to talk a little bit about how long the Long March is built. And in this particular case, two quite large segments of it were going to end up in orbit. Normally, with a staging rocket where you've got... Think of the Saturn V, right? The Apollo rocket. The largest part of it didn't break orbit. That just fell down into the ocean.
Yeah.
The next part would have gone into orbit and stayed up there. And then the last part obviously went all the way to the moon and back. And so most of that, the second stage, for example, most of that would have burnt up during re-entry. And they would have tried to, it's an important part of planning the flight path of a rocket, to bring anything that's too big to burn up on a re-entry to sort of land in a place where you know that the orbit is going to decay at a certain rate. And it's going to land specifically somewhere in the ocean. And you can predict that quite well, because they have good models for drag. What made the Long March 5B different is that the first stage took the second stage up into orbit, and it stayed there, but it didn't have a controlled flight plan for where it was going to land. So its orbit decayed naturally, which means that it was what they call an uncontrolled re-entry.
Right.
And the problem with that is not so much that we do it, because we do it all the time, but we sort of aim where things are going to land once their orbit decays. The problem with this is it was 100 tons of stuff.
Right, right. And I suppose not having the intentional starting data of knowing where it is when you're pointing it on its way, just kind of vaguely drifting, could go anywhere.
Yeah, so, well, they knew it was orbiting this on this 41.5 degree axis, but the point is that because the re-entry wasn't meticulously planned or the details weren't shared internationally, and because it was defined as an uncontrolled natural re-entry, we had this situation where they didn't know precisely where and how fast it was going to decay, and therefore where on that plane of the orbit it was going to land, and it obviously ended up in the Indian Ocean. But the point really is that since 1990, nothing over 10 tons has been allowed to re-enter in an uncontrolled way like this. So the last time something particularly big came down was probably Skylab, America's proto space station. That was 76 tons, and that came down quite a long time before 1990. So that gives you an indication of how long they've been trying to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen.
Right, right.
And there are a lot of rocket launches a year. I mean, so the Long March 5B is a heavy lift vehicle. It's in the same class as the Falcon 9, the Soyuz, the Ariane's, the Ares rockets. It's a big boy.
The big boys, yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that's come out of this is that international players would like to see China making more of an effort to deorbit responsibly, I suppose, would be the way to put it. Which is completely fair enough, especially given the name of the space station, quite ironically, is called Tianhe, which means harmony in the heavens.
Ah.
But perhaps not on Earth. But yeah, it's just a little thing. It's one of those things where I think a lot of fuss was made about whether it was going to decimate a city, but it simply wasn't big enough. And of course, most of it did burn up in re-entry. That was always going to happen. The point was is that any hard fragments, anything that was like superstructure or designed to resist heat, as often, you know, lots of rocket parts are, any of that was going to land a place that was inhabited. Obviously, it didn't. But yeah, we have to plan for these things if we're going to keep sending things up into space, which
indeed
we are want to do, and especially China's want to do, because the CNSA, like other space agencies around the world, is showing no signs of stopping. We're entering a sort of new space golden age as rocket technology gets cheaper and more advanced. I think the primary reason for this is because of cost, basically, is the complexity of avionics that's required to bring a ship down in a controlled burn is basically wasted money, because it's going to burn up. But it has to be done if we're going to avoid situations like this.
Mm.
The other thing I wanted to mention was much happier news. This is regarding Starship's SN15, and here we come on to the correction. I think we spoke about the serial numbers, and you asked, was it that 15 others had been blown up beforehand? And I said, yes. And that's not quite true, unfortunately.
Or fortunately, that not that many have blown up. Or is it more?
Well, no, it is slightly less. So 8 have been built and destroyed, but SN 12, 13, and 14 have simply been rolled into other testing programs that don't currently involve flight plans.
Right, right.
So SN 12, for example, can be seen partially assembled on the test pad, undergoing long-term structural testing. We think it's possibly to test how the rocket performs at max Q, which is the point of maximum aerodynamic force against the rocket as it shoots through the atmosphere. So
right.
Kind of like the reverse of terminal velocity.
Mm.
Instead of falling or pushing upwards, we're probably going to get physicists emailing and saying, nope, not at all. But that's, I thought it was a fairly succinct way to put it. But to stop beating about the bush, as it were, SN15, yeah, successfully landed after its high-altitude flight test, which marks the first Starship to do so without a rapid, unscheduled disassembly since the program began. I think that's just a wonderful way to put it.
It is excellent.
It's a very rocket scientist way of saying boom.
Absolutely.
So that was really cool. There's some great footage of that. You can see it on YouTube and all the usual places. There was, unfortunately, a camera outage pretty much from the get-go. You can see the rocket disappearing through the clouds, and then the camera on the rocket freezes, so you're kind of just looking down at the clouds. Video does begin again about halfway through the flight when it gets to the belly flop maneuver, and at that point you can see some periodic footage of it lighting the engines and stuff. But yeah, so these are new Raptor engines they've put on. They've changed them a bit. They've improved perhaps some of the fuel flow and stuff. And yeah, this one really worked, and it's just a positive step on the Starship road, because they haven't had many of those. I know that SpaceX are keen on their testing by a sort of iterative process where if it blows up, it blows up. They've learned something. That's fine, because when their stuff does RUD, as it were, they take it apart, they analyze it, they try and figure out what went wrong, and that informs the next design or the next improvements.
Yeah.
But yeah, just nice to see them actually winning for a change.
Nice one.
And that about wraps it up for space.
Well, excellent, because I have something that ties on quite nicely to a couple of bits. Firstly, it's vaguely space related and it's got funny acronyms. So, either of you board game kind of people?
Kinda.
I'm getting there. I'm a little bit more than kinda now. I picked up one that was kickstarted and difficult to find and really good value. It's called Far Away by Cherry Picked Games, I believe. And it is a two-player cooperative space exploration game. Combine Amazon with Weyland Yutani from Alien, and they've kind of chucked you off to the other side of the galaxy to colonize some worlds for them, and the kind of the world building and the instructions is really, really good in the way that they're writing it, kind of like they've chucked you onto the spaceship, you've just woken up from hypersleep, and this is their kind of cheery, you're going to be alone for the rest of your life, don't die thing. I'll just read a tiny extract that I could find online that gives you a little bit of a sense for the tone. So they call the They've kind of gone for that thing where all of the bits of the game are like, oh yes, your exploration equipment. So this is the Far Away Recruitment Kit, which is what they call the board game. Your exploration kit can be delivered straight to your home inside the 5.75-pound box. I don't know. You'll find over 800 pieces. We've included an instruction manual so you can assemble your spaceship with minimal government intervention. Please register your DNA online so we can credit your account upon mission completion. Please be aware, upon your death, your credits will not be added to your company account. So if you die, you fail. But it's brilliant, brilliant fun so far. It's really difficult.
I'll be up for
really
playing difficult. That. If we, well,
if we can, I think you really like it. One of the fun rules there is that once you've, you know, figured out all the rules for the game, because they're a scummy corporation that hate you, they didn't give you any radio equipment. So as a character, you have a loneliness meter as well as a hunger meter. And every round that you spend not in the same tile as your compatriot, you gain one loneliness. But you're not allowed to talk to each other as players to strategize when you're not in the same hex.
Okay.
Which is kind of a fun mechanic, which we haven't started using yet because we don't know how the game works.
Yeah.
But it's a good idea. I mentioned funny acronyms or initialisms. They have this for all of them, including tokens and another word that was much longer. I can't remember them, but for example, a hex, when they're explaining what it is in the manual, hex, you have these little tiles that you build the world with, stands for heuristically explorable xenoterrain. And there's loads of them. The die is deterministic something enabler. It's good fun.
Maybe deterministic integer-based chance enabler.
That would make a lot of sense.
Oh, I love that sort of thing. It's so silly.
It's really fun. Okay, so when we're allowed to and it's safe, pizza, far away, and yeah, it's going to be great.
And siren beer.
Yeah, that's a date.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, the Stefs will be jealous. Anyway, another sci-fi thing, if I may, since we're slowly navigating into the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation portion of our broadcast today, I will fire one of mine, if I may, because it's just a quick one. Love, Death and Robots, Season 2, is out this Friday. I'm very excited. Have you seen it, Luke?
I have, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed season one. I think my favourite one was, I can't pick, but if I had to pick one, it would be Zima Blue.
That's my favourite.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember the title, so thank you for reminding me. The one that's got blue involved?
Yes.
Yeah, that was great.
I won't spoil it for the audience, and I will let you get on with your recommendation, but it was kind of like, the scale of the artwork made me think a little bit like of a race that you would see in the Ian M. Banks' Culture universe. You know, just doing something so utterly, like, benignly egotistical as to paint a planet blue because it's your favorite color.
It's just excellent.
In fact, that actually is key plot point in the Hydrogen Sonata, which is the last of the series before Ian passed away. And there is a elder species in the galaxy that does this thing where they take a perfectly good world and they like iron it flat and they go like, look, it's perfectly spherical, and everyone's like, hooray, why?
Cool, thanks for doing that.
But they've long gone, so now everyone's just kind of sitting there going like, oh, I think they wanted it to mean something about, you know, the difficulty.
Overanalyzing the art.
Yeah, exactly. And other characters are kind of like, seriously, it's a waste of time. But yeah, so that Zima Blue reminded me of that, and the next series is going to be hopefully just as good.
Yeah, it's great fun. Pete, is this something that you've come across?
Yes, I've watched all of them. I'm really quite amped up for the new series. I wonder if the animations, you want to say, because it's all computer animation, isn't
yeah,
it, some
all
description,
different but, studio per episode.
I wonder if they're going to be slightly more long form in themselves, because some of them, they're relatively short, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it was 6 to about 20 minutes is the kind of range that they were in. All really nicely self-contained, though.
Is this series going to be the same format in the respect of timing?
I believe so.
Well, anyway, I mean, it would be nice if it was slightly longer, but even so, have you seen the trailer?
Yes, I have. Very excited.
I have not.
It's got me. It doesn't show too much, but it's just enough to get your juices going.
Nice.
Definitely.
So to speak. Because the thing is, you can, if you're so taken, you can binge watch it.
That's my plan.
You can do all 6 episodes in one hit.
Absolutely.
I might savour it like a fine...
I can't resist.
Fine something.
Fine wine, aged cheese, or a triple IPA that tastes metal.
I might just do one and let it sink in and then, you know, do it that way. I think that's... I didn't do them all... I mean, previously, the most I did was 2 at a time.
Mm.
They're quite intense, some of them, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't know if you guys knew this, but I found out just today when I was talking to a colleague, but every... Well, obviously, there's only so many combinations of 6... episodes, but everybody watches them in a different order.
Okay.
Each Netflix account has them in different
orders. Well, they shuffle them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because somebody goes, oh, the first one, yeah, with that creepy space spider web thing. I was like, no, it was about yogurt.
That one was horrifying.
I love the yogurt one. It was fun. Or are you talking about the space spider web thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty messed up.
The
but
space spider web one.
Possibly, that's not the best description. I can't remember what it's called, but possibly the best alien creature monster reveal I've ever seen.
For me, the first one was the... sort of cybernetic fight scene with the mutants.
Oh, what a way to start.
Yeah, it really screwed my head up, that one. That was a hell of an episode.
Definitely. Mine was the three robots with the cats.
That was really cute.
It was fun. It was a good fun one.
I loved the characters. I mean, it's amazing. I think it's such a testament to good animation, good writing, good production values when over 6 or 10 minutes you can get invested in three characters that have, you know, 20 lines of dialogue in the whole thing. It's great.
Definitely. Well, we'll let you know next week if we've finished the whole series or just a couple of episodes. We will have opinions.
So is that going to be your multimedia recommendation?
I do have another one because I sort of remembered that as we were going. I'll quickly launch this one. But if you're interested in synth DIY, this one on a channel called Curious Mark, Mark with a C, Inside Failed Vintage Components, 1 megahertz quartz crystal and early CMOS IC. Literally just this integrated circuit little chip is bust, and he peels it apart and talks about it. Really interesting. That's it. That's my recommendation. Who's next?
I shall step up to the plate if you like.
Pete said he had a juicy one, so he can round us off.
Indeed. I will go for... It's an album from me.
Ooh.
It's got a bit of an 80s vibe to it.
I'm sold.
In that it has that really sort of shh kind of snare sound. Very big gated clap sounds too. Everything's really, really like fine and precise, but it also has that huge bizarre reverb that just went away after like 1990.
I'm so on board.
Yeah, so it's by in keeping with the theme, it's like a jazz three piece called Galaxians. If you remember, I don't know if this would have been any of our era, but Galaxians was like a Namco game or an Atari game or something like that.
Right.
In the same vein as Space Invaders and all that stuff, but a bit later, and you kind of progressed along a linear path, shooting things out of the way, much like Space Invaders. But it had this on-rails feel to it that was kind of modern, that the screen would scroll down. I remember playing it a lot, and my dad had like a sort of plug-and-play best of the arcade years thing that you plug into the TV. And just being quite fond of Galaxians anyway. But that's the band name. And kind of in keeping with that theme, this 2017 album is called Let the Rhythm In. And it's just fantastic. If I had to pick, I suppose my favourite song would be Working Weekend. But Sanctuary is also a highlight for me. The synths on Working Weekend are particularly cool. There's some rotating Leslie piano in a sort of chorus lick, which just sounds fantastic. And it's got that sort of that really popular dry funky drum style where the drummer plays something that's quite complex but it's very sparse, and makes me think of like Vel's Trio or Nate Smith, all of that stuff that was massive on Twitter about 2 years ago, sort of born out of, I guess, before that kind of Chris Daddy Dave or Jay Dilla, that kind of stuff, Questlove, I guess, and it's now sort of transitioned and become fairly ubiquitous in anything that's new jazz or... So yeah, this kind of rides that spectrum of different genres. It has that sort of new jazz thing, but the production values and the synth are extremely 80s. It's just really good. So that's
excellent.
Let the Rhythm In by Galaxians.
Perfect. Well, it's been quite spacey and synthy, even though we had no news. Pete, where are you going to take us on that last one?
This one is YouTube channel, as per
as
normal.
Always. Have you ever done a non-YouTube channel?
But this one's quite apt for the podcast. I think it's only been going about a year, and I'm surmising, it doesn't explicitly say, but I'm thinking that they might have done this specifically for lockdown, or certainly during lockdown. So the channel is called Soul State, and that's two words, S-O-L-S-T-A-T-E, so Soul State. Basically, it's sort of production tips from quite leading producers. It's mainly aimed at people working with Ableton, but you can carry across a lot of the themes and a lot of suggestions that they make. But they have various producers such as Deadmau5, Ian Kilpatrick, Chromeo, Morgan Page and Skrillex.
Nice.
And they
had nobody we've heard of. Nice one.
And then
I've heard of some of them.
It looks like they've been doing it in their own studio. I mean, the Skrillex one, it looked like he was using his phone to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas others had higher resolution setups. But they were just sort of highlighting a various particular ways they tackle a technique on a particular thing. It might be just using sidechaining and how they do it in one case, or, you know, how they would just do a particular drum track or something like that. But it just focuses into a very detailed on one element of how they, as a renowned producer in their particular genre, would tackle something. And then there's several videos by each of those, and there's many other producers on there as well. So I just thought it was quite interesting. As I said earlier, it is very Ableton orientated. It seems that the majority of those producers use Ableton. There's no affiliation with that particular software vendor. I just think it just happens to be a very popular door in the EDM sort of circuit.
Totally. I think I've actually accidentally run across a couple of these on my recommended feed. And why didn't I click on them?
Well, nice. There's just so much on there, it's overwhelming, isn't it, most of the time?
Always the way.
The stuff that I ignore, and then I sort of decide that I'm going to watch it a year after it's been like, haunting me and go, actually, this is quite good.
Yeah, YouTube knew what it was on about.
Yeah. But there you go. So my recommendation for this week, YouTube channel, Soul State.
Nice.
Wonderful stuff. Synthy, spacey, and lots of goodness from Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 72, even though it's a slow news week. We hope you tune in next time for 73. We love making these. We hope you love listening to them. And we'll catch you next time. Farewell!
Delicious. Well, I've got that.